Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Come out.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
I now learned this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't, Lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. Today's live stream is titled, Do This When You Need Money Fast. For the last few days, less than a week, less than a week, people have been asking me for money. $600 for this, $1,000 for that, rent money, let's see what else. So, tuition money for school, money for school uniforms, money they need food to eat. So, I had to say no to all of them. And then about a couple hours ago, if that, or within the 2 hours, within the last 2 hours, it dawned on me, they're like, some of these people like needed money like right now or yesterday. Okay. So, then I had, well, I guess, an epiphany of sorts. And I thought of some of the ways that I've demonstrated money in the past. And I really wasn't under pressure when I demonstrated the money, but I just never thought about it was, you know, how do you get money when you need it fast? So it's dawned on me, and I'm seeing some stuff that, but actually a gazillion other people have done. But that's why that's inspired this podcast for this morning. Do this when you need money fast. Now, what is to do this? Generically speaking, find something. That's to do this. Find something. Well, that's part of to do this. Find something. Part one. Well, find something or make something. You got two options there. Find something, and I'm gonna give some illustrations based on what I've done in the past. There's nothing I read in the book. This is what I've actually done. Find something and or make something and sell it. Now, in the program notes on here on Blog Talk, our scrolling marquee, some of the program notes that I'll mention today is eBay, Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist. How fast is fast when it comes to, you know, money? And we're talking about all legal means. How much can you make? $1,200 in less than 12 hours. That's something that I've actually done. And I'm gonna walk you through that process. Homeless with a smartphone, internet connection, and an app. All right. Something to sell, which I've mentioned that. Make / build something to sell. Acres of Diamonds or Reparations. The original podcast today was supposed to be Acres of Diamonds or Reparations, so we're going to fit that in here some kind of way. So let me go from how fast is fast, how much you can make, and then $1,200 in less than 12 hours. Now, this is me. I'm going to share one of my personal experiences. But I just wasn't under pressure when I did it. That's why I didn't think about it when I talked to these people and originally said no. But hopefully, and I've sent out notes to all of them and texts and all this, so hopefully they'll contact me back, and then I can help them with some of these shares I'm going to share. So once, and I've done this several times, but in this one particular instance, I had an empty room in my house, and, you know, I was going to rent it out for some money, which is something that a gazillion billion people have done through the history of man. All right. So at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I went on Craigslist. No, you know what? It wasn't even Craigslist. It was the city paper. Because several, well, I guess larger cities had what they called the city paper. And they had, a free room for rent section. All right. And you can do the same thing on Clubhouses. Not Clubhouses. What do you call it? Craigslist. But in any event, I went online at 2 a.m. Placed a simple little ad, you know, one room, bedroom available for rent, and this is how much, and, you know, the basic stuff. Nothing fancy. And at 4:30 a.m., is when I got the first inquiry, you know. So about 6:30, 7 a.m., you know, when people are up getting ready to go to work, I started to return, messages for people that contacted me. And then I started doing, I think the first open house was like at 8:30. I was showing the room. By 12 noon or 12:30 at the latest, I had $1,200 cash. I did that in less than 12 hours. Just with a spare bedroom. So, first things first, you need to recognize what available assets that you have. For me, in this one particular case, it was a spare bedroom. Now, what I just said is simple. It's not sexy. We all know somebody that has done it, and people have been doing it from day one, from the history of man. So if you got a spare room, you got a spare garage, and the key is, some of you might be saying, I don't have a spare room or spare, I don't even have a garage. The key is, and this is why I want to bring up later in today, acres of diamonds or reparations. Because yesterday I played, one of the audios I played was Acres of Diamonds by Russell Conwell. No matter who you are or where you are, you're standing in your own acres of diamonds, spare bedroom that you have can probably solve, if you got a financial challenge, that could sustain you. And I want you guys to do a little arithmetic. I'm going to take a little break before we go to the phone calls. And we're going to go to the phone lines in a few minutes, in about 5 minutes or less. But imagine, because different people need different amounts of money. Let's call this the bedroom, spare bedroom strategy. Once again, a lot of people do that every day. But imagine if instead of you doing it one time, I made $1,200. Some of you have done the same thing. But what if you did that 10 times? You made $12,000. Okay. Or what if using that same strategy, okay, what if you did it? Now, you'll probably have to partner up with some people on this. Well, what if you did it 1,200 dollars, like, so you're probably going to get a partner on this, $1,200 times, let's say instead of doing it one time for $1,200, what if you did it 100 times? You can find, here are the strategies. Strategy number one, find something. If you don't have it, somebody else, if you don't have a room, a spare room, then there are other people who have spare rooms. Partner up with them. And you guys cut the cake, you know, the way you agree upon. You know, if you really get ambitious, okay, and once again, you're going to have to take some partners in this one. 1,200 times, let's go up to 500. $600,000. All right, we're going to be back. And we'll go through some other examples. Now, the ones I give is what I've done. So, once again, it's a spare. And if you don't have that spare bedroom, then make one. Get on YouTube and learn how to build a guest house, which is nothing but a glorified shed, in my opinion. Anyway, we'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go. when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Now, I played that audio a gazillion times, and this morning I was on Clubhouse. Or, Clubhouse goes on 24/7. These conversations around the clock on that app. And it was somebody that I just know him through Clubhouse. Don't know him in person, never met him in person. But and I'm taking him at face value. That he's homeless. And he's in North Carolina, and but here's what I know about him for sure. All right. And he's been homeless for 3 years. And I'm just telling you what he told me. So I'm taking him at face value on that. All right. And I've sent him $5, which isn't much, but I sent him $5. And I promote his room every day. Now what he's doing is he's on Clubhouse, and he is soliciting donations, and he's telling people his story. That he's been homeless for 3 years and he's disabled. He used to work for Food Lion in North Carolina, the part of North Carolina he's in. Tells you the town that he's in, and. And he essentially, but here's what I do know. I'm taking all that on face value. Okay. Now, here's what I do know. Oh, and he's called into here, so he's got a North Carolina phone number. Of course, you can be in Moscow and have one of those, though. But anyway, I'm taking him 100% on face value. So, early this morning on Clubhouse, he's got his own room on Clubhouse. Clubhouse operates on what they call rooms. So he's got his own room where if you go in there, he explains his situation and he asks for a donation. All right. Now, last night, or early this morning, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, he was in somebody else's room. And occasionally, he goes into other people's rooms on Clubhouse, and he solicits donations. In this particular room, there were people that do not know him, and, you know, they were basically trying to vet him, which fair is fair, okay? You don't know this guy. So, long story short, words were said, and the guy that was what would be deemed as e-begging, the guy asking for donations, called at least two people heartless bastards, which once you do something like that, you have destroyed any chance of your social capital just goes down the toilet. So I was about, matter of fact, I had unfollowed him and was about to block him, and then I thought, you know what? This is a teachable moment. Now, in combination with, like I said, for the last few days, I've had people ask me for $1,000, $600, you know, rent money. I need money to buy rice. I need money to buy food. I need money for the tuition. I need money for gym clothes. All within the last 3-4 days. So I say, you know what, this is a teachable moment, and this is the universe's way of, you know, do something. So I didn't block him, and I did unfollow him, but then I went back, had to search for his name, and then I followed him again. And I sent him some suggestions, and the first suggestion I said, and I made emphasis, these are just suggestions. Number one, it might be easier to get money from people if you have something to sell. That's number one. And then number two, don't name call, because when you name call, you obliterate any type of social capital that you might have had. And I use that term, social capital. All right. And he thanked me for those two suggestions. And then I thought, well, you know, wait a minute. All these people that are asking me for money, and this goes to the Acres of Diamonds, and hopefully we can get to today because it's still early. Acres of Diamonds or reparations. But Acres of Diamonds, I played that audio yesterday. Every one of the people that asked me for something, standing in the middle of their own Acres of Diamonds, but they don't know it. And that's why I gave, and I said, you can, strategy number one, find something to sell. Strategy number two, make something to sell. A la, what's her name, Mignon Francois, she made cupcakes. Her grandmother's recipe was her Acres of Diamonds. All right. So every one of those people, and I've, you know, they're in different parts of the world. But anyway, so this guy, he's homeless, yet, now here's his acre. Here's some of the tools he has within his Acres of Diamonds. Number one, he's got a smartphone. Not a flip phone. He's got a smartphone. He can see videos. He can make videos. You know, he can get a whole endless amount of how-to videos. So he's got a smartphone. Number two, and that's an asset. Number two, he's got an internet connection. Because you can have a fancy phone, but if you don't have no internet connection, what good is the phone doing you? So those are two assets. Number three, he's got access to a whole bunch of apps. The app that I contacted him on or became aware of him is Clubhouse. But, you know, if you got an internet connection, you got access to Facebook and WhatsApp. There's all kind of communities online, including Blog Talk. Blog Talk is a community. All right. So those are three assets. And number four, the fourth asset that he has is time. He has the leisure time because he's not into the 9-to-5. All right. He's got the leisure time around the clock. You know, he sleeps at Sheets gas station in a part of North Carolina that he's in. So he's got the time. That's the fourth asset where he can solicit things. You know what? Here's the fifth thing. He's got the courage. This guy, I've known him for about 2 months now. This guy, and I communicate with him every day. This guy has the cojones, the balls, to ask perfect strangers for money. Okay. And he has done that. I've only known him for about 2 months. He's been doing that, because I'm taking the story at face value, for the last three consecutive years. Those are five assets. So later on tonight, we're going to have a little class on do this when you need money fast. Now, the way I've done it, I've done eBay. I used to do eBay auctions, you know, where I used to buy foreclosed properties from finance companies when they had finance companies and banks. You know, you can buy them for $500 or $1,000. Most of them would need work. But you get them for that low price and do nothing to them, and then you put them up on eBay. I mean, after you get everything settled, you put them up on eBay, and then we used to do seven-day auctions. I've made $5,000 in a week doing that. I've made $6,000 in a week doing that. I've done that with partners. I've made up to $10,000 a week doing that. Now, imagine if I did 10 of those in a month. That's $100,000. You know, so key is find something simple. You know, for me, it was beat up houses or a room. Totally unsexy type things. I put out Facebook Marketplace. I had my backyard. I said, look, my backyard's available for rent because there's a whole bunch of people out here that are the working homeless that they just need a place to stay. They got a car. They're sleeping in their car or truck or van. They need a place that's safe and quiet. So I said, well, you know what? I got a tent, a brand-new tent kit, and I got a nice backyard. I'm on a little bit over a quarter acre where I'm at right now. And then I started getting calls from people with RVs. Long story short, I skipped the backyard bit, and I rented out a carport. Okay. So it find something, you know, recognize your untapped resources, or make something. Like Mignon Francois, she made cupcakes. Some people, you might be good at making dinners. Some of you, it's limitless on what you can actually make. If you can't find something, make something. Those are two different strategies. Find something, strategy number one. Make something, strategy number two. And then put it up on eBay. You just need one platform. You don't have to even put it up on all these platforms. Just see what works for you. eBay, Craigslist, OfferUp, Facebook Marketplace. I'm in Florida right now. I'm in Central Florida. I know people that are carpenters. I got one partner colleague. He's in Nigeria. And then I got another one that lives in Swaziland, which is Eswatini. Now they changed the name of the country. But the primary way those two guys make money is they make something, once again, they're carpenters. And then after they make it, they put it on Facebook Marketplace. So, Facebook Marketplace to me is like the way to go. But in a matter of hours, you know, and Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, eBay, all these platforms, they have cash buyers ready to go right now. Right now. Globally. So if a guy can make a sustainable living in Swaziland, or better known as Eswatini today, okay, or, well, Nigeria is large, but population-wise, I mean, it, the sky's the limit. And we're talking about a matter of hours. So tonight and probably tomorrow as well, I mean, tonight we're going to have a clubhouse meeting on it, a session on it, but tomorrow, you know, we'll, like I said, matter of fact, I'm going to get back into it. I already reached out to every one of these people that asked, except for one. But you, whatever you need within a matter of hours, like I say, if you don't have anything, well, first thing, if it appears that you don't have anything, remember, each and every one of us is standing in our own acre of diamonds. If it appears that you don't have anything, sit down and get quiet and think. I never even thought about renting out a carport until somebody suggested it. It never crossed my mind. All right. Now, I'm not the only one with carports. There are countless of carports in my community. And you don't even have to be in the same state or same county or what have you. So if you don't have it, somebody else has it. And then you just partner up with them. So whatever, you know, like I said, is endless on the number of commodities. And then, you know, how much do you want to make? You know, when I remember when I did that room for $1,200, I said, man, I wish I had another room like that. But now my thinking has expanded. Okay, well, make a room. Just make one. Now, you might have to partner up with some people. Okay. And that's one of the reasons why I play often the Steve Harvey thing, 10 by 10. All right. Get something, make something, and sell it. And you can sell it on eBay, Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist. There's OfferUp, and these are some basic strategies. eBay, I don't know if the eBay still has an auction thing, but eBay used to have 24-hour auctions. We used to do the 7-day auctions. We were doing houses with that. But now you also have crypto and all kind of stuff. So anyway, there's a lot of opportunities out there. And then if you guys want to talk about it, like I said, the original idea that I had before, that, you know, this, do you need money? I mean, do this when you need money fast. Is acres of diamonds or reparation? Because my take on it is this. The get reparations from whatever government, the state, because now you got people trying to get reparations on the city level, state level, and, of course, federal level. And that's going to take some time. All right. Meanwhile, while you're doing that, in my opinion, you're blinding yourself to the acres of diamonds that are available to you right now. But you're not going to get that through the government. You know, you're going to have to recognize the available opportunities that are within your reach right now. And, just like that Nine Friends audio that I played a gazillion times on here. You know, those Mexican people, They didn't wait on the government for reparations. They saw an opportunity in a neighborhood. They saw the diamonds that were in that beat-up house, and they bought it and they turned it into a house that looks brand new. That's acres of diamonds in action. Meanwhile, some of their black neighbors, particularly the ones in California, or trying to get some type of legislation passed so they can get reparations for black folks in California. And then I'm going to phone lines right after this. It was interesting. Some of the people that let's say reparations does come through. There's still a divide here because somebody put in the room that I was in the other night. Some of the people that are that would be entitled to reparations, because this is for what they call the Aedos, what they call African descendants of slaves. Here's where an argument broke out on Clubhouse the other night. They put a picture of Adam Clayton Powell, I think his grandson. I think it's his grandson, either his son or his grandson, who, by appearances, looks like a white man. You had people arguing over that because of his skin complexion. But he's if you go by lineage, if you go by DNA, he is Aedos. He is an African descendant of slaves. So just because he has white skin, he shouldn't get it. You have people. We can't agree on nothing. I'm going to get off my soapbox. So anyway, 410, your mic is open. 410.
Who tip, Brother L.A.? How you doing?
Fine.
Well, I'm back in town, and the thing is, I'm glad to be back in the South. But, Brother L.A., while you were talking, what you're describing and what you're able to do, millions of people can't do because you're an entrepreneur. Well, entrepreneur, I mean, you were saying you could rent out a room or you could do certain things on eBay and everything. A lot of people can't do that. That's too sophisticated for a lot of people that needs help and needs help right now, like the gentleman you're talking about in North Carolina. What I did while you were talking, I went on the internet and I typed in temporary hiring services near me. Within a 20-mile radius of where I live, there's 100 temporary hiring services for the people that needs money right now. And the thing is, they pay people every day. Whenever they send you out on a job and you come back in to the office of that temporary hiring service, they give you cash in hand right then.
I'm glad you brought that up. Once when I was broke, somebody told me about Labor Ready, which is a temp agency, just like you said. I went, signed up. They gave me a job to do that night. It was an overnight shift at Kmart or someplace like that, restocking the shelves. I went into the office the next morning after the shift, got paid cash.
Thank you. Yeah. Now, the thing is, you don't have to have a skill. You don't need a lot of education. And the thing is, they're issuing out job assignments every day. In fact, I did this one time before just to test it out. Mm-hmm. As I got out of governmental services, I was hired by the federal government, and my wife was running a store. I went down to a temp service just to see what was going on as a more or less, you know, I was just, you know, just going out to explore what was going on.
Right.
Without anything else, I went to the desk and I put my name down, and sure enough, they called me and I went out and they provided transportation to the job site, brought me back. Now, they did do this. Instead of giving me money, they gave me something like a ATM card, a slip mm-hmm. with a code on it, and they issued me out cash. And the job paid $10 an hour.
Okay.
Now, they didn't require no particular skill or anything else. And I'm saying that to say this. And look, I don't want to sound harsh. God knows I have sympathy. But if somebody's in that desperate a need, if I can find 50 temporary hiring services within my area where I can walk to or either catch a ride to, then somebody ought to suggest that to the people that needs that money. And after I got, well, now I'm going to give you this year. After I went to that temporary hiring service on one of the jobs I went to, they got offered me a permanent job. So now, I know people need help. I know it's hard times out here. But something like you're suggesting, you might have to build yourself up to it. Now, if that gentleman has a cell phone,
he can go
into, what do you call that? That's that room, or whatever, what you call it? That he's going into to ask for money. What was that? What's that website?
Oh, Clubhouse.
In order for him to get, the money from people that donate on in the clubhouse, how do you get the money to him?
Oh, he's got a Cash App account, which means he's got a bank account.
Thank you. So now, what does that tell you? If he got a Cash App account, he's got a cell phone.
Right.
That tells me what is the cheapest what is the cheapest card you can get for a cell phone?
I don't know. When I was doing it, I used to get prepaid cards for like T-Mobile about $45, a little bit under $50.
So now he can
afford a whole month.
Right, he can afford a smartphone where he can talk to you on Clubhouse. He got a Cash App. Hey, look. I'm going to say this, Brother L.A., God, and God forgive me. He don't need no help. He don't need no help. If he can afford all of that,
and he can,
doesn't need any help.
I've known him for 3 months.
And that's all he's doing is begging, panhandling.
For the last 90 days, he hasn't missed a day.
Thank you.
I don't know him offline. I'm just saying that phrase. I don't know him offline. But what I just stated, I do know. He's got a phone. He's got a connection. His Cash App is working. All those things I do know.
Okay. Now, if he got all of that going, something tells me that, hey, look, that brother doesn't need any help. He needs a kick in the ass. That's what I'm saying. And look, if he doesn't like it, you give him my number. You tell him to call me. I live in North Carolina. But now, there's temporary hiring services all around where he is. And you say he's been homeless for 3 years.
He's in Roxboro, North Carolina, I believe.
You're breaking up.
He's in Roxboro, North Carolina.
Well, Roxboro is close by several metropolitan areas. So now, hey, if he can't make it, God help him. And look, the first thing I would do is he asked me for help. I do just like these damn preachers. I say, you know what? Let's hold hands, brothers, and let's pray. And I'd give him a prayer just like these crooked preachers and say, you know what? We're gonna pray on it. And the Lord is going to deliver it to you. You just wait for it and see what happens.
You made an excellent suggestion, which I'm going to tell him because I've done that myself.
A lot of temp agencies.
Yeah, and I've years ago, like I said, when I was broke, I needed gas. I went to Labor Ready. Matter of fact, right in Baltimore County. That's where I went. I got hired on the spot. I was restocking shelves overnight. And several guys that would work with me got offered full-time jobs.
Yeah, I did.
I just worked it to get over the hump. I worked it for about a week just to get over just a little bit of a hump, and I was good. You know.
And I didn't need the money. I just went as an experiment because people were coming in there saying, well, you know, I need some money or I'm homeless or what have you. So whenever they come in my store, from then on out, I gave him the card and said, look, call these people. Go down there. I think they can help you. But I'm telling you now, you're just wasting your breath on this, brother. Now, if he got a cell phone paying $4 to $5 a month, he's got a Cash App where he can get the money out. This brother's very sophisticated. And look, if I'm not mistaken, Roxboro's close by two major metropolitan areas. And
yeah, I looked
and
it up
just,
online, yeah.
Did,
yeah, I looked it up
Roxburg,
online so it exists, yeah. And he says it's
I'm
a small town where he can, basically he can walk to get to everywhere he needs to get to. But, but you're right, he has, and that's what I love about the age we live in right now. If you got a smartphone, you got a lot of power in your hand.
Of course you do. But all I'm saying is he's playing on people's sympathy. And look, you can tell him I said it. I live in North Carolina. You tell
well,
him
like
to find
what turned me off about him last night, or early this morning, because it was early this morning, was, you know, he called two people heartless bastards. And now, when you e-begging, man, you can't be. That just destroys all your credibility. And then I thought, wait a minute, you know, this is a teachable moment. Maybe he needs to learn how to use what he's already got. So.
Okay, look, Brother L.A., Roxborough is close to Durham, Chapel Hill metropolitan area, which is also pretty close to Raleigh. Well, Durham and Raleigh is right there. Those are major metropolitan areas.
Right.
There's a temporary hiring service right in those areas. And look, those are major cities.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've heard of the triangle, Durham, Raleigh, and Chapel Hill, and all those places.
Yeah.
So now my thing is, and look, I wouldn't waste my breath. I wouldn't waste my breath. But look, I know some people having some hard times. I just left Brooklyn yesterday. There's some people with some hard times. But now the thing is,
and Brooklyn's expensive.
But my thing is, if it's expensive, then you go to these temporary hiring services. And look, you can rent a space, you know, temporarily, you know, a one-night space or what have you. Even if you got to go to a bed and breakfast or what do you call them, Airbnb.
Yeah, Airbnb,
All I'm telling you is that, look, if you need some money that bad and you don't have a skill, and you got to get up about yourself, go to the temporary hiring services. And look, when I went to the temporary hiring service there in Baltimore, there was a whole lot of guys that needed a regular job. Well, use your social capital. You can say, well, look, guys, all of us is here and we ain't got no job. And the thing is, we need a place to stay. Let's put so much together. And let's go ahead on and put our money together and rent something temporarily or either rent a room. Friend of mine, he was renting out rooms, $100 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you have places like that in Brooklyn, but all I'm telling you is I wouldn't waste my breath. Now, you know, I'm just saying, and look, I have sympathy for people.
Right.
Once I explore your situation, if you really need it, I'm going to give you something, but there's three things I don't do. If you standing on the street with a piece of cardboard saying we'll work for food, or either I'm homeless and I need money, well, the thing is, I pass right on by.
Okay.
Now, I did offer a guy one time, he said, I'll work for food. I said, well, look, come on, I'm going to take you to Burger King, and I'm going to buy you lunch. He said, well, no, just give me the money. I walk right away from him. Now, I'm going to feed him, but he didn't want me to feed him. He wanted the money. So now, I'm just saying I wouldn't waste my breath. And anybody else that comes to me, that's what I do. I suggest that they go to a temporary hiring service.
That's an excellent idea, and I will suggest that to each and every of the people that asked me for money over the last few days. But that is an excellent idea. And like I say, I've gone through Labor Ready in the past, and it was just that overnight. Went in, got hired, go to this place. I think it was Kmart. We restocked it. I was in the toy section. I restocked the shelves, and then you get off. They give you a check, but you can cash the check right there, and you walk out with cash. So I've actually done that strategy, so that's at least two strategies that I can suggest to them. And that is an easy one. If you got a smartphone, you're right. If you got a smartphone, you can find out how many temp agencies are right near you. And you, like you also stated, you might get, oh, you know, here's another strategy within that strategy. Just don't pick one. Don't sign up with just one temp agency. Sign up with everyone that you can get to.
Thank you.
You know.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, yeah, if there are five or ten of them, sign up with every last one of them so you can keep the flow of work coming to you. And then, like you also stated, If you do good work, more than likely one of them's going to ask you what want to hire you on full time.
That's
right.
I
had a friend of mine from high school. He took on a temporary Christmas job at UPS. You know, it was just a temp job for, you know, because Christmas season, UPS packages. I mean, you know, we all know how holiday packages are. So, but he worked his tail off, and that temporary job turned into a full, actually it turned into a career.
That's
and
right.
Full time, he's still with him.
Yeah, I know a lot of people like that. So, you know, look, brother, and then again, the brother may not be sophisticated enough to think about what you and I are saying. But I'm just telling you now, when you're down and out and you need some quick cash, go to a temporary hiring service. Because now look, every day that I went there, and look, this was just an experiment. Every day that I went there, they always had a place where they could send you to make some money.
Right.
And like I said before, $10 an hour wasn't bad, even in Baltimore, you know.
Man, when you're broke, anything's good.
Of course. But anyway, let your boy come on in here because I'm always accused of taking up too much time. And if you got any time
We got plenty of time. We got plenty of time. It's just 11:35. But hold on, Beez. We got another call here. 407 area code. Your mic is open.
Grand Rising, good morning, brothers. It's always nice to tune in and hear you guys having a very wise and educated, intelligent discussion. Now, I got triggered when I heard Beasley, and greetings, Beasley, bring up the cardboard sign and how we react or respond to that cardboard sign. We've all seen it, right? I have my own personal view on that, and I just wanted to share it because I think it's a little bit more metaphysical and spiritual for me. I have come off the freeway so many times and seen somebody standing there with the little cardboard sign. And these cardboard signs don't always say the same thing, I noticed. You know, it might be I just need help. I see women out there with their kids. Oh, my goodness, that really tugs at your heart. Saying, and then they stand on the street. They stand all over the place. But when I come off the freeway and I realize that light is either red or green, if it's green, I just keep going. I wave at them and say, there's the cardboard sign again. But if the light is red and I pull up right next to this person, somehow Great Spirit is talking to me about letting go of the cash I have in my nice air-conditioned car, and they standing out there in 90-degree heat in Florida. It's like it doesn't even, for me, it's not even a question of am I going to lecture him about where he can get help, where he don't need to be standing out here with a cardboard sign begging for money, blah, 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 blah. It's not even about that at some point. At some point, spirit, universe, God, whatever you call it, is just talking to you about letting go of something you have to bless someone else in that moment. Because that red light's not going to stay red. And am I going to sit there and lecture somebody in 90-degree heat who has maybe children sitting there in a wheel or in a stroller or something? No, I'm going to do it. If I have the money in my air-conditioned car, I'm going to just grab that money and say, Yahuwah bless you, have a nice day, and drive. The red light turns green, I drive off, I feel like I've done my part. So that's just one more, my different reaction to the cardboard sign. I have had so many discussions with people about this that I just wanted to share that everybody, it's not wrong or right. I'm just saying it's not wrong or right to pass by, give money, or whatever you think you might is right to do when somebody's holding a cardboard sign, which they had to take time to write that out, and they're either going to deceive somebody, but I'm going to get some money today, I'm going to make $100 today and deceive, and then go buy drinks or drugs. Who gives a fuck? You do whatever. In the universal perspective, it's not our business to think about what they're going to do with the blessing you give them, or if they're going to find a job tomorrow, or if they know what to do tomorrow. In that moment, when I'm in my car on wheels, I'm not going to think about that. I'm just thinking about what is my job in that moment as a human being with a heart of love. And this person, especially in Florida, 90-degree heat, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I don't know who could do that. Why would they do that? Why do they need to do that? People go through all this mental chatter and mental confusion about what they're supposed to do when they come to a red light and somebody's standing there with a cardboard sign. Sometimes it just means you're supposed to bless them with whatever you have, even if it's sometimes I don't even have money. I just have sit there and ask, what are you doing here? Why? I stopped one time, and a guy, I asked, how did you get to this place? I didn't have a whole lot of money. He said, well, I came here from Hawaii. I'm like, Hawaii? And he said, and I met a woman, and we divorced, and now I lost my home. He said, in the time that light was red, I found out he came from Hawaii. He married a woman. He ended up homeless and divorced, and that's why he's standing here with a cardboard sign. I'm like, my jaw just drops. I'm like, wow. Okay, God bless you. Here's a dollar. Just all the guys a dollar. Have a nice day. And he said, and I put a smile on his face. And that's all we can do sometimes in that moment. And stop trying to figure out whether that man is cheating you or whether he needs to go off and get a job or whatever. It's just in that moment, just do what's loving and caring and show somebody that you're not alone. Thank you. That was my comment.
Well, thank you. Beasley, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. Well, you can say hi to Viata yourself now.
How you doing, Viata? It's a pleasure to hear your voice again.
I'm doing great. I'm getting ready to upload some videos I made for my YouTube channel. So I thought I'd chime in before I get busy and see what's going on with you guys.
I know one thing, culturally, when it comes to these traffic lights, I've noticed over the years, I don't know what you guys notice, but when I see a Latino at a traffic light, they're selling something. They're selling fruit, flowers, water. They're selling something.
Wow.
When I was over in Asia, they were selling cold water at the traffic light. And I was roasting this particular day, and I said, I'll buy two of your cold waters. So it all depends on, you know, I respect the entrepreneur at that traffic light. If you got something to sell and I want what you got, I'm going to patronize you.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
what did you say, Viata?
Even if they don't have something to sell, their level of ignorance at that point doesn't matter. You're only there for a brief moment, and you can't educate people on how to be an entrepreneur at a red light. Just give what you can to bless them and put a smile. They might be near suicidal. And you stop and just put a smile on their face, give them a dollar. They say, oh, there's hope. There's hope that somebody is trying to help me in my ignorance, in my lack, whatever. Just put a smile on. There's too many people committing suicide these days. And that's a moment that you can make a difference maybe and preventing suicide even, because they got to be somewhat depressed in my mind to get up there with a cardboard sign in 90-degree heat.
Well, I look at a person like that as courageous. Okay.
That too. Yeah, that too.
But, Brother L.A., can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
But Sister Viata, what Brother L.A. and I was talking about, look, a dollar, depending on how many dollars that person can collect, a temporary hiring service is a sure thing for 8 hours that they can get money at. And the thing is, if they're out there in the hot sun, they could be in the hot sun making $10 an hour. So, you know, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, that dollar's there. But if he doesn't get enough people handing out dollars, a sure thing is a temporary hiring service. And
my point
if he,
yeah, I'd rather do the temporary hiring service. I'd rather do the temp agency than the cardboard thing.
Yeah, but my point is, it's not always about them. It's sometimes about you and your willingness to give up what you have in that moment. It's not always about the cardboard sign man. It's about you and your heart and your mind and willingness to get you in an air-conditioned car where God probably got $50 in your pocket, and here's somebody got probably nothing, no home, and you. It's not all about them all the time. You got to know in that moment, is this about them? Is it about me? What is my role in this moment? whether to help somebody get a smile on their face, or am I going to sit here and teach them what the right thing is to do, or just give them something to build their lift their spirit?
If you,
give them the name and direction of labor ready.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Yeah, you know, the next time I come to a traffic light and I don't have anything to give them or don't want to give them anything, I will tell them, you got a cell phone? That's question number one. When they say yes, look up labor ready. And
Just tell them to put in temporary hiring service, temporary employment service near me, and it'll give them every temp service in that area. That's what I did while you were talking. I said temporary employment service near me, and
so
it gave me every service.
Prior to, I've heard of temporary agencies before, but, you know, like Kelly's or whatever, you know, you got a way to, I think Kelly's was paying like every 2 weeks or whatever, or every week. But with Labor Ready, and there are other agencies like Beasley said, like Labor Ready, they pay daily. And I didn't know about that until the guy that was actually working there told me about it. So that's why I'm saying at the next light that I'm at, that is, I'm going to suggest get on your phone and, let, as Breezy said, put in the search, any search engine, temporary labor agencies.
Employment agencies.
And they do pay, a lot of them do pay daily. And I've experienced
and
that myself.
What if they don't have a phone, L.A.? What if they don't have a phone, L.A.?
Well, you know
then
what?
I've been on a subway in D.C., and it never fails. In D.C. and probably other places, because you were in Brooklyn all day. Everybody's got a cell phone. If you don't have one, there's somebody within your arm reach that has one. Ask them, can I temporarily borrow your phone for about a minute or two, and tell them what you want to do.
Well, I'm glad Sister Viata
We're not in a desert.
Question.
We're not in a desert out here.
I'm glad Sister Viata asked that question. You know what? Go on your cell phone, go into your search engine, and you say, well, look, we're right here. It'll give you a location, and it'll give you directions. And all you got to do is just say, look, here's one here, here's one here, here's one here. And if they pick out one, hey, look, in fact, I'll take you where it's at. And the thing is, hey, if they can't do it from there, then, hey, look, I'm sorry. You know, if they really want to now, I'll go ahead on and put the information in the search engine for them. If they're that desperate. And what will happen is, in fact, I'll let them make the phone calls to every last one of them if they need money that bad. So now I'm glad you asked that question, Sister Viata. That's what I do. And that's better than giving them a dollar. What do they say? Give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Give him
feed him for a lifetime. Yeah, Viata,
right.
If they don't have a phone, and many people, not everybody has a phone, but almost everybody does have a phone. So you can go out here and within any shopping center, any Walmart, walking down the street, if you're nice, this is where the social capital comes in, may I borrow your phone, stand there right in front of them. I just need a minute or two. I need to call, and, you know, there's no shortage of people with cell phones. I mean, people just sitting right next to me on the subway. Can I borrow your cell phone?
I hadn't met a homeless man come out of T-Mobile, and this guy just came and sat right in front of the car. I'm like, what is he doing? So I started talking to him. And then another guy came up who worked for Walmart, and we discovered this guy needs a job, and we were talking to him, and he said, well, you have to go over there to Walmart and apply for a job. He said, well, I don't have any ID. So we both looked at each other and said, that's a problem. So we said, well, if you need a phone, maybe T-Mobile sometimes has a service where they give free phones out. And so I went in, bought him a bottle of water while he was waiting, gave him some water, went into T-Mobile, asked about free phone. Well, that service is at blah, blah, blah. It's over at so-and-so. And when I came back out, I was gone. So I thought, that's weird. because he just showed up right in that moment, and we had a conversation with him to learn he didn't have a phone, didn't have any ID, even though this Walmart employee was trying to help him. Well, they're hiring at Walmart, so I don't have any ID. Okay, how are you going to get around that? Oh, you have to go over there and do this, that, and the other. And all it was to me was just a moment in time to show love to somebody. We weren't able to fix his problem. We just showed love. I bought him some water, gave him the water. He said, thank you. I went into T-Mobile to see if we could find a way to get this guy a free phone. When I come back out, he's gone. There was just a moment to show love.
Yeah,
the water.
What he needed to visit the social services office, because social services is equipped to basically help a person get his ID together.
Well, that's what the other guy was trying to tell him. We all were both giving him information to that might help him move to the next level above homelessness, blah, blah. He said he was evicted from his family. He had a family dispute or something like that. And we're like, oh, okay, well, we can't deal with that. And then he just disappeared, like that, boom, disappeared. And I thought, okay, that was just a moment for me to show love to and reach out to somebody less than I had. And that's all I could do in that moment.
And look, Sister Viata, Brother L.A., one of your favorite presidents, I know y'all love him. Anybody can get an Obama phone. So now,
that's true.
You know,
anybody
that's something
can,
your
yeah.
president
you
did do for
him. You got to have ID to do all that, though. So that was his problem.
They can get that for you. They can get that.
That's his job to go. Again, he disappeared, so we did what we could do to try and help him.
Oh, yeah. You can't make a person do something. That person, and then again, a lot of these people, like even this homeless guy I was talking about, I don't know his mental state. He seems like he's reasonably stable, mentally speaking. But I don't know his real life backstory. I don't know it. Just like
most
the guy that you're talking about.
Most homeless people have mental illness. That's the reality.
And if they're suffering under that condition, they can get a check.
Oh, do you think because you said most. I don't know what percentage you would put on that. I think the common denominator with many homeless people, I'm not going to say, and I don't know what the percentage would be, I think the common denominator with a lot of homeless people is they don't know how to build their own house. If you know how to build your own house, you don't have a homeless problem.
Yeah, but you got to get the lumber. You got to get
that's
the nails.
That's why I recommend you guys hear me mention all the time about the social capital and the Amish and the Mennonite. If you don't have it, who in your social circle has it?
That's true.
That's the way the Amish and the Mennonite operate. If you don't have something, I mean, the basic relationship between men and women, okay? We're equipped biologically with certain things. Women are equipped biologically with certain things. It's a partnership. Okay, let's get together. I don't have this. You don't have that. But together we got something. So when it comes to a homeless person, whatever, all right, you might not have, for instance, one of the eBay auctions that I participated in, we did like $10,000 in a week. Now, I found the house, but I didn't have the money. So I got on the phone with people that I had social capital with and said, look, I got this house from a bank. This is how much money it is. And then, you know, they put up the money. It was about four of us total. I just had to find a property and then put it in escrow and all that. And then we split up $10,000 it's 8 days later. So you don't have to have everything, but you have to have, but who in your circle has what you don't have?
Well, if you talk to Robin, who many years as a homeless person, some people don't want to build a house. They want to be outside the tree and the grass, whatever. They might not be ready to build a house. You think they want a house. So that's an option for sure, but there's a lot of people with mental illness and PTSD on the in
the and you know what? And I'm not equipped to help those people. I'm not equipped. Those people are not in my lane. I'm not equipped to help them. I tell people, hey, look, you need a social worker. Get a social worker, then come back to me. That's where I'm at with it. Now, I already know I can't save the world, number one. And number two, I'm not equipped to help a drug addict, an alcoholic. I'm not equipped to help any of those people.
Well, you're equipped in the moment to show love, L.A. That's what my point is. Sometimes that's all you need to do in the moment when you meet someone like that is show love. That's all they need. They don't need you to tell them how to build a house or go to social. They just need in that moment to have somebody love them. Everybody is suffering at that right now.
Well,
everybody. Many people are
I'll
suffering.
Have them tune into the not the female solution. I have them tune in to Soul Purpose Healing, and they can get all the love they need there. Speaking of which,
you don't have any love in your heart, L.A. Is that what you're saying?
What time is Soul Purpose Healing tomorrow?
No, it's health and well-being tomorrow.
Oh, excuse me. But what time is that tomorrow?
Tomorrow I'll be talking about healing the mind and body with a higher understanding of love, the word love. People overuse that word, so I'm going to break it down for them, how to heal the mind and body, understanding love, because that word is just overused. So it's tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Female Solution.
And the number for that is?
515-605-9325, Health and Well-Being with Fiata.
Okay. Well.
Thank you.
And they can get all the love they need right there.
Well, they can get all the wisdom and knowledge they need. Then it's up to them to take over their life. Self-responsibility. Don't be in thinking you're entitled to anything. Just take self-responsibility and run with it.
Oh, wait. Hold it. Sister Viata, could you repeat that phrase again?
Take self-responsibility and run with it. Self-responsibility includes loving yourself. That's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. It starts with you. So many people have been brought up in households that they didn't learn how to love themselves because they were abused verbally, mentally. And then they're adults on homeless or whatever because they don't know how to love themselves. And so when they start feeling true love, then maybe they'll learn how to do that. But if you ignore everybody going around ignoring them and not showing that, giving that energy, then that's where it's a struggle, people killing themselves.
Isn't now one of the ways that you can show love is, because what Beasley was talking about, is that's putting feet to your love by telling them you get on your smartphone and then punch in how many temporary agencies are near right where you are right now. I call that demonstrating love myself.
Of course.
It is a type of love, but I'm going to go over 1 Corinthians 13 for all those hypocrites out there who think they love with Jesus. And show them, no, you falling short just like me and everybody else. So let's just work on this together. That's why we got a large homeless community right now. People have not been showing love to each other.
And you know what? You're so true. Because the thing is this, Sister Viata, I'm quite sure, and I can't say it's a definite fact, that 99.999, and I'm quoting Herman Cain, of the people that see out that you see out in the street that's homeless, has family. And look, if not, they have a circle of people that know them. And the thing is, like you said, now it's a shortage of love in those people's circle. But now I've noticed. Now I just left Brooklyn yesterday. The homeless people that I saw, it was more than one in an area. It was about 5 or 6 of them, or 10 or 12, ever what have you. Now, what Brother L.A. is saying is that's social capital. And look, a lot of them have mental problems. But the thing is, the best love that we could give those people is to bring out social agencies and look, point to those people and say, look, what programs do you have to help those people? But a lot of those people don't want help. But for those that do, if you have those kinds of problems, that's why we pay our tax dollars, is to go in and get those people medical and financial help, because if they're that mentally stressed, then they qualify for help. If a drug addict or a drunk can get a check and food stamps, I'm quite sure a person with mental disabilities could get a check and food stamps and probably get a place to stay. So there's all kinds of ways we can help those people. But just giving them a dollar, I mean, that's not enough to help them, really, unless they get a whole bunch of people like you to give them a dollar. But there's ways we can help those people that would be beneficial to them for life.
Viata, here's another thing, Viata. A lot of people, I don't know what the percentages are, but I've met my share of being a landlord. A lot of people, matter of fact, this is how this podcast got started. A lot of people, for whatever reason, that are mentally sound, they have burnt bridges within their blood family. And, like, for instance, the squatter that was in my D.C. house that inspired It's My House, she had burnt her sister and brother-in-law, they had kicked her out of her house. She was on her way to a shelter, and she had a child. But I didn't think about it until my mother told me about it. But her sister and brother-in-law kicked out of their house. So she had burnt up social capital in that house. Her father wouldn't take her in. Her parents who divorced, her mother didn't take her in, and she had another sister. So we're talking about, let's see, mother, father, sister, brother-in-law and a sister. That's five relatives, blood related, that wouldn't take her in. I misread that signal big time. Mentally stable and loved, but if it wasn't her way, it was the highway. So some people, in my opinion, if you don't know how to love those people, which means the best way to love them is not even deal with them at all. So hell with them, or whatever happens to them, fuck them.
Well, I interviewed Robin, your co-host, from some time. She was homeless for, what, 13 years or something?
15 years. She was out there a long time.
I asked her, what did she learn from that? And I can't exactly remember what it was, but it was so mind-blowing what she learned from her 13 years of being homeless that I never again will judge another homeless person. It was, I have to go back and listen to that interview. I don't know, does she listen to your show now? But
yeah, on and off,
She blew my mind with her. And I asked her, well, what did you learn from that experience? Well, she had PTSD, for one. She was in the military way too long, in my opinion. But that's what happened. This government is so effed up, sending men and women off to war to make money
But what about the people that, because the squatter I'm talking about was never in the military. There's just some people out here that are shitty people.
L.A., they had to be in some kind of war, maybe not over in the foreign country. But people, in my opinion, who end up homeless have been in some kind of mental war or emotional war. So whatever you want to call it, they are at war for a while and then they end up on the streets, whatever. But the lessons that they learn are totally wise, mind, life-changing, and they might end up dead, whatever. But they got to learn something if they're in that situation. If they're in that situation like Ron, they're going to learn some powerful lessons, life lessons.
All right, let me put this out there, okay? I'm about to drop the M-bomb here. But niggas could be any color, okay, in any culture. Two takeaways I get out of the Bible, Old and New Testament. Moses didn't reach the promised land because he was fucking with some niggas. And Jesus got crucified with all the miracles that he did, all the healings that he did, feeding 5,000 people here, feeding 4,000 people there. All the love that he gave, at the end, he got crucified for fucking around with some niggas. So some people you just can't help.
True. That's very true.
And you will get crucified showing love to some people. I'm not equipped to help most certain people. I'm straight up about mine. I can't help a drug addict. I can't love a drug addict. I'm not there.
And that's why the Bible is not a history book. It's a book about allegories, metaphors, and symbolism. It's about lessons. You demonstrated that perfectly just now, L.A., how the Bible is meant to teach us lessons about this life. There is no history lesson there. It's just the lessons we learn from that, the words on that page, can help us be more accepting of what's going on in our life, right? You know, we don't have to change everybody. We don't have to help everybody. We're just supposed to change ourselves, help to be, have the courage to change what you can change within yourself. And a homeless person, to me, is there to teach us about ourselves and our lack of love, our lack of this, or how we cling to our material possessions. And those people don't even have any possessions. There's so many lessons that homeless people bring us. I don't trip about it anymore.
One of the lessons I take from homeless people is become a capitalist. That's where I'm with.
Whatever.
Brother L.A., Sister Beata, have you guys, Sister Beata, have you ever read the Bible?
From beginning to end, I'm 67 years old, Beasley. I've read the, I started my birth, I was born in the church. My grandfather was a Church of God and Christ pastor. I heard the Bible while I was a baby. I was in his church so much. Then I started reading it from cover to cover. So for the last, I'd say, 50 years, the Bible was my main book. Then I started realizing other things out there I needed to learn. So I see the Bible differently now. After 50 years of Bible, and Sunday school, sometimes we got to grow up and go graduate into life experiences and be a mystic like Jesus Yeshua was.
Exactly. But now look. Did you read that part in there where Moses killed 3,000 people because they were hard-headed? Then he had to kill another 24 people. And look, his own three of his own sons he had to kill because he couldn't change their attitudes towards what they needed to be in order to reach the promised land because
and
they were hard-headed.
And how about the story where they had chicken meat coming out of their noses and the Most High said, you people are crazy. I'm killing. Then the Most High, the energy of the universe killed a lot of them because they had chicken coming out of their damn noses. They were so greedy.
That's right. Because they were hard-headed and they wouldn't listen to reason. And that's what Brother L.A. said. Some people you just can't help. But now for those that you can, you're trying to do the best you can, but if you keep going back to a person, I had a cousin one time. As long as I lent that cousin some money, they would go and get drugged out and get drugged out until I got to the point when they came to me later on. You know what I did? I said, well, look, if you need some money, you got to go out there and get it the best way you can. Now, after about 3 or 4 months, a light came on. And they said, hey, wait a minute. You know what? I got to figure out some kind of way to take care of myself. And it was hard love. It hurt me. But the thing is, while I kept giving him money, he kept doing the wrong thing. But when I stopped, all of a sudden, the light came on. Hey, I need to do something here. And you know what? That cousin's been off drugs for 20 years. But I had to stop supporting and enabling that cousin in order for them to see the light.
That's showing love. That's showing love. Yeah. Now, he might not have felt that way, but you demonstrated love by, you know, not enabling him anymore.
Oh, it pissed him off.
Can you please repeat? You bring up a really important point that I keep going over, how people get enabled in their bad, in their unhealthy behavior. I won't even say bad or good or wrong. They get enabled in their unhealthy behavior. You got narcissistic people. I had a narcissistic stepmother who was so abusive to my dad, and he just tolerated it. And he enabled her the last few years of their marriage. So enabling is dangerous. Yes, yes, yes. Enabling is very dangerous when you have an unhealthy person in your life who is not moving forward and being healthy, right? So, yeah, you said the magic word. Don't be an enabler in a relationship, especially long-term relationship like you just described. You saw this person not getting better. You kept trying to help them. You're being nice to them. You think you're being nice to them, and really what you're doing is enabling their unhealthy behavior. So we got to recognize that, too.
Now, go back to where we started that in this conversation, Sister Viata. Go back to where we started at. Brother L.A. and I said, hey, look, there's ways that you can help people to help themselves. And if you keep enabling those people, then they will continue to go on with the path they have chosen. When in fact, there's a better path. And the thing is, that's love. That's love. When you see a person walking down a road of destruction, sometimes you have to stop and let that person hit a brick wall before they'll change directions. And that's all we were saying. Yeah, that's love. Now, the love you're talking about is love too. But don't let the love that you have keep enabling that person to go down the road of self-destruction. And that's why you have to weigh out each situation the way it is. I'm not saying you do what Brother L.A. and I were saying with a broad brush. What I'm saying is, when you see people out there panhandling and doing whatever what they're doing, they're wasting valuable time when they could be doing something constructive to change their situation. And I just gave the example, look, go to a temporary haunt service. That way, if you need cash or you're a drug addict, for one day, you can go out there and work and get enough to supply your habit without breaking into somebody's house or mugging somebody or either stealing from your relative. But now, if you want to change after a while, if you keep going to that temporary haunt service or services plural, then somewhere down the line, you're going to take pride in getting some money in your pocket, and you're going to use that money wisely to take on, as you say, self-responsibility. So the thing is, yeah, if you're mentally retarded, then, hey, my thing would be, hey, if this person got PTSD and they've been in the military, well, go to a VA center and say, look, this person have served their time, and they have a problem here. And the thing is, they got that problem serving our country. It's going to take time, but in the meantime, they would go in and give them temporary help until they get them services that they need.
The problem with going to the VA is they drug people up into a state of mind that is totally unhealthy. So that's not always the solution. I understand what you're saying. But in my opinion, I tell people, stay away from the VA. You need to find a health center, a meditation expert. You need to find an herbalist. You need to find a shaman. You need to find anything but the VA is part of this damn corrupt government. They ain't going to help you. Stay away from and Robin is a perfect example. She was a veteran. She went to the VA like so many people I know, and all they do is give them drugs and make it worse sometimes. So that may be an option for some, but I wouldn't recommend that at all. It's more about showing love to people and getting them out in nature. You know, I have a friend, Kwame Sunhorse, who was a Vietnam veteran. He had PTSD. He was a drug addict. Went through all that. And he's now a shaman of sorts. He takes people on retreats in the Native American way and helps them get well. So that's the type of person to me who can be more helpful, even to homeless people, addicts, that you take them in nature. You put them in nature.
Viata, hold on. We got another call in before we run out of time. 314, your mic is open. 314. Oh, 314, your mic is open.
Unmute your mic.
Yeah, 314, yeah, unmute your mic.
Hello.
You there, Pianchi?
Yeah, man, I've been here since 10 o'clock. Holy cow. I went to the grocery store, and I was surprised. I thought this was another day. My goodness. Lord, I feel, I'm glad I ain't homeless. I would have missed the damn soup lunch.
Well, you're right on time.
Well, I was going to say, Viana, the Bible do have some plagiarized truth.
That's true.
And one book is 2 Kings 19:35. Talks about the Cushites defeating the Assyrians, killing 185,000. The Cushites came out of Upper Egypt, marched over 1,200 miles to help their kissing kin in Jerusalem, which was called the Yahwehans, whose local god was of no importance and no power. His name was Yahweh. And if they had not won that battle, this was before, this was about 700 B.C. This was before Judaism, which was before Christianity, which was before Islam. Those three Western religions probably wouldn't have been. But as in many cases in history, the correlation of you being here today and what happened in the past is very, very real. 2 Kings 19:35. It was to Harker and Shabito, my namesake. But, L.A., you know, you're talking about turning your one of your rooms in your house into a boarding house.
No, that was a long time ago. I just gave that example.
Yeah, you can't do that today because that I don't even think you was probably violating something back then. That goes against your zoning, legal residence. You can get in trouble for that.
Well, it all depends on what neck of the woods you're in. You're right. In certain cities you can do it. Other cities you might have to get a license. So it all depends on where you're at.
Well, yeah, you're right. Someplace out in Hicktown, USA, but in your major cities, it doesn't go down.
In your major cities, you more than likely have to get a license, particularly since Airbnb is in the in the game now.
No, it might work in a college town because the residence I brought my grandson, he was going to let some students rent a room. The one didn't want to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Then mama called me up and wanted to know how much my grandson was paying. So that there had to be some strictly.
I know at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Now, this from some people I know that live down that way. There, which I understand Baylor is or Waco, is a college town. So there are landlords who rent out, I mean, some just specialize, just students. And they'll get the full semester's rent up front. So, like, say,
yeah.
in Waco, yeah. Texas, but that's Waco. That's not Dallas or Houston.
Well, residency at LSU is $24,000 a year. Then you got to pay $4,000 for meals. Hmm?
How much you say the tuition is?
I said a residence.
Oh, okay.
It's $24,000 a year. That ain't the tuition. Tuition is about another $40,000, right at $40,000. And the meal ticket is about $4,000. Then you got activity fees if you're going to do that. This deal where Joe Biden and the Democrats are wanting to write off, forgive student loans is a bunch of bull crap. it ain't going to go no place because you can't, you know, they get into that damn stuff that you want to do things for specific ethnic groups. Now, what he should have done, I think, is make student loans exempt from bankruptcy. Then that would allow everybody the opportunity to take advantage of dissolving their student loans in bankruptcy. Not like he's doing it now where he's only classifying a certain segment of the population who, like, I think, and I don't like to blame young people, the students. I think it was bad planning if you got a student that's going to take a major and spend that type of money, and that major, if it turns into a job, won't pay off the damn loan.
Well, you got Pianchi, as you know, well, all of us know this, so you got people in their 60s still paying off college loans.
Well, I understand. But what majors did they take? Librarian, black history, psychology?
Well, there's one guy that's paying off loans. He was a marketing major.
Well, he should be able to make, if he's any good at it, to pay off his loan.
But he's not in marketing, though. That's the thing.
Where those students go wrong is coming up through the elementary grades because they're not prepared for the rigors of college. You look at the historical black colleges, at any given time, you may have five that has a graduation rate above 50% in 6 years. 6 years means you automatically going to pay 50% more than the traditional tuition, which is designed for 4 years in and out. And then, too, in the hood, there's all kinds of scholarships, but the kids are not qualified for.
Pianchi, hold on. I got a question. It goes out to all of you. In your opinion, because I was having a discussion 2 days ago with a high school friend of mine, in your opinion, do HBCUs prepare their students to operate in a white society?
Depends on what part of the society they're going in. Who is that harking and stuff, man? It sounds like they're trying to brand a mule or something, man.
Can I ask?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I don't know about HBCUs and I don't know about the hood, but my two sons grew up in a middle-class neighborhood. Their parents didn't drink any alcohol. My husband, I didn't drink alcohol. We raised our children in the church, so forth. Now, when my oldest son went off to the University of Florida in Gainesville, he wasn't prepared for college either. Most kids are not prepared for college, even though his dad had a college.
Why wasn't he prepared, Viola? In your opinion.
Because he became an alcoholic. He was so influenced. Most kids go into a college environment. Even though their parents don't drink, they go hog wild crazy because the alcohol is there. So four-year colleges are not for everybody. And parents ought to make up their mind in elementary school to start training their children to be entrepreneurs and avoid the college loan trap and the 4 degree, unless they're brilliant and geniuses and they have a strong desire to be a doctor or whatever 4 year college can offer. My 6-year-old grandson is almost a chess major, a chess expert. This guy would avoid me twice. I'm not finished. Let's be respectful. When I'm finished, I'll yield the floor when I'm done. This little 6-year-old is being trained by me, for one, to learn everything he can to avoid college. And my granddaughter, the same thing. They're smart. They're great minds. They're going to create their own jobs for them. They don't need college, in my opinion, because I've already seen the damage that 4-year colleges can do. Yes, 4-year colleges can create some amazing people, professionals, blah, blah, blah. My experience is no college for my grandchildren. They're going to learn how to be wealthy entrepreneurs. I'm either going to have a chess master or a swim expert or something, but they're only 6 and 8. I got plenty of time to train them to be something other than a college drunk. And that's what happened.
This is not my lane. And Pianchi, hold it, Pianchi. We're going to handle, relay baton to you right in a second. If they get interested in some of the STEM topics, they're going to have to go through college, particularly if they want to become engineers. Pianchi, you'll pick up the pace on that.
Well, I was going to say, this sound like to me your son wasn't prepared for alcohol.
Of course not. He's Native American heritage. No Native American with that. He's strong on my mother's side, Native American blood. Native Americans usually become alcoholics right away when they even taste alcohol. So, yeah,
I'm glad to know that. I can save on bullets. But anyway. If alcohol can be used as a weapon, then you can save on ammunition if you ever go to war again. But with the homelessness, why don't the churches do more in order to take in the homeless? They don't do that. That's a problem. See, here's the thing.
I agree.
We're already spending money to address these problems. Same way with foreign aid. We've given countries, and I'm glad Donald Trump, when he got in, he cut that stuff out. But now Democrats are back in. Democrats always try to buy something. They're the biggest supporters and purveyors of prostitution, encouraging prostitution, than any other entity that I can tell you. They forever trying to buy somebody, ever spending money trying to buy somebody, whether it's student loans, whether it's Thanksgiving baskets, come out and vote for me, or whether it's some of this other foolishness. Once they get you, they do not want to let you go, i.e. they are totally against school choice with vouchers where parents can take their kids out of those schools. There's nothing wrong with four-year colleges. They're actually good. That's where you pick up skills for a major that you want to go to. Everybody, what are these entrepreneurs going to do? I mean, without these technical skills. Everybody can't be a plumber. Everybody, matter of fact, you can go to Home Depot, buy a toilet, open the box up, and the toilet will jump out and go over there and sit itself down where it's supposed to be, and damn near fasten itself in. They just that automatic nowadays. They don't need plumbers to install toilets.
A lot of the technology that we have today was not of this level, the third dimension. It was of other dimensions, Pianchi. I know that may come surprise, but there are a lot of extraterrestrial technology.
Yeah, give me some examples, Vaya. You see, I'm not jumping on you, but
where do you think the pyramids came from? When you analyze the way the pyramids all over the world, from some 50,000 pyramids exist on planet Earth, in the United States alone, we got over 10,000
pyramids. Have you ever
been
in a pyramid, Vaida?
Have you examined? I've seen pyramids plenty. I've studied it on YouTube.
I was in that country for 9 years, in and out of pyramids, temples, and tombs. I can tell you right now, what you are saying is not true. But
now
I understand
talking,
when you get that stuff.
What country were you in? What country were you in?
I was in Egypt.
That's not the only place you got pyramids, Pianchi. You got pyramids
that's
all
where,
over the earth.
That's where the seventh wonder of the world is, the Pyramid
of
Khufu.
Yeah, that's the only place they discovered more.
Khufu. A perfect equilateral pyramid that sits dead center on the longitudinal of the earth. It used to be the international dateline until they moved it over 15 degrees or so, Greenwich, England, by the way.
Machu Picchu?
They were built by men.
Have you ever been to Machu Picchu?
Those were dirt mounds. They were built by men, too. Cahokia, that's a dirt mound. They piled dirt up on top of each other.
You need to study the latest information about pyramids. They know these were not built by men. I don't know what you're looking at, but the information I've seen is showing that these pyramids were built by men. You know the weight of those pyramids.
Well, wait a minute. Can I talk? I didn't bother you while you was talking. At least we can show some courtesy.
Go ahead. Sorry, I apologize.
Thank you. You know what the Bible says about the wife she's supposed to follow her husband. I'm not married to you, but that was another conversation. The wife supposed, the man is the head of the household. I bet Beasley's the head of his household. I hear people arguing that all the time about these new ways of thinking. That's what's wrong with society. That's what's wrong with so many families. You don't have a man that's leading the household. In African countries, everybody likes to talk about how I is African. That's the way it is. The wife and the child was the property. Spell it, P-R-O-P-E-R-T-Y, like property elsewhere. The wife and the child was the property of the husband. Still is today. That is in their tradition. But
now,
getting back to pyramid,
global,
pyramid was built by men.
But if you look at the weight of those pieces that make up the pyramid, there's no way a man could have been carrying and placing
the largest stone. The largest stone in a Great Pyramid weighs about 50 tons. The outside blocks weigh about 2,000 pounds. Yes, that is within the realm of male manpower.
That's not the only pyramid that has that toped over.
There at the Neferu's pyramid. There at the Neferu's pyramid on the side, you got what was called the bent pyramid. You can see where they made a mistake in the angle. They tried to correct it as they went up, and then they abandoned it.
My point is this. Let me give you my point, and then I'll be quiet. When you say that if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you got to go to college, or you got to have this or that or this, there's something called the grace of the master, the great spirit of the cosmos that puts in the minds of men and children and women especially how to become your great self. We don't always have to go to the schools made by men called universities. The great master, the great spirit of the universe can put into the minds of men how to create something really awesome in this planet. Not to mention that my belief is that this dimension is not the whole shebang. We got fourth, fifth, sixth, and more dimensions where you have spiritual energies that are influencing the minds of men. And that's my point about the pyramids and any other great structures, that the technology that we see today on planet Earth is not all of men. It had to come from a greater source, and that's what they're discovering. The government is hiding right now the existence of ETs and other dimensional spirits and energy. They're hiding that information now. That's really clear if you listen to people like Greer, Professor Greer, and other people who are, I forget the name right now. But there are a lot of people who have access to information that show us the government's hiding.
Wait a minute. You say access to information. Who got access to something that nobody else have? And people say, oh, I got the secret. Well, if you got the secret, how in the hell is it a secret? These people are local.
Media.
Ain't no Martians came from outer space and built no damn pyramids. Pyramids and temples were built by men.
That's your belief. That's okay. I
can look at it and see. If I had it right there on the side of the Great Pyramid, is the housing. Wait a minute. Hang on for a second. Is the housing where the workers work? We've seen the contracts that they signed. We see the molds where they brought in the stones from elsewhere, and they fashion them into the perfect squares that they are on each corner so that they could fit. Oh, that's
in
still
one
there.
Country. You did that in one country when the pyramids are all over the planet Earth. And you expect me to take that as the final word?
But here's the thing. The most perfect and the epitome of equilateral pyramids lie there on the Giza Plateau. It's called Akhet Khufu.
LA, you need to educate the ignorant about pyramids. This is not what we could go on and on debating this, but this
well,
is just a belief.
Well, like, it was a book I had to read in ninth grade called Chariots of the Gods.
Well, hell, you've been talking
that's
about
podcast,
I'm saying this, people want to argue about some place that they ain't never been. Then when you got someone who's been there multiple times, for multiple periods, not just as a tourist, but out there in the sun in the dig, there at Hatshepsut's pyramid, not a pyramid, a tekenu, or as known as the oblet, hell, the temperature gets up to about 140 degrees. 140 degrees. You get off your bus, you can't walk too fast because the air would blister your skin. We see what they was doing in order to build that. And it developed a crack and they abandoned it.
The evidence is out there, Pionke. You can't hide it anymore.
Also,
it's out there.
Yeah, you can go down in the Sudan.
One
you can go down in the Sudan. You don't have to respond. It's just let me talk. You're rather than saying that's okay. You can go down to Sudan. You can see where they had trials and tribulations in doing so. Matter of fact, there's more pyramid-shaped objects in the Sudan than what you find there on the Giza Plateau, where you only have about Akhet, Khufu, Khafra, Menkaure, and you got Seneferu's pyramid, which is bigger than the big pyramid. It's built out of red stone. I've been in that one.
I did a show on July 31st this year. There are 100,000 pyramids on planet Earth. And you're going to talk about pyramids
in one
location?
All right, I'll tell you what.
Well, Miyagi has actually been to the pyramids. He's got the credit.
Name me 50 of them.
I can do that. I'll get you that information.
All right, well, then, all right, next time we see you, send it to L.A. and he'll send it to me.
Okay, well, look, it's 12:35. Viata's got her promote that again, Viata, for the
yeah,
morning.
As far as the homeless is concerned, I agree with you, with your other boy there. He's absolutely right.
Watch your mouth, I'm not a boy. Watch your mouth, I'm not a boy.
Some people just ain't going to make it. That's it. They not going to make it. It's not for them to make it. Everybody ain't going to make it. Many are going to fall by the wayside. That's what natural selection is. You got dumb, ignorant, and worse. And that's just the way it is. Ignorance don't know, and dumbness don't know of respect for skin color, by the way. But that's just the way it is. You talk about the Native Americans. The Native Americans had made some bad choices. One, they supported and allied with the enemies of the United States at that time. So when the enemies got beat, they got beat. That means simple as that.
Now we can all end this call on a very positive note, and I'm not going to call either of you boys. I call you kings because we are in a time where
I'm
the women
no
have
king.
Rise. I didn't say you. I said I'm going to call you King Pianca. You don't have to receive it, but I see all
the the Constitution say you can't respect somebody in this country with a title of nobility. Go ahead.
It's my choice. Why are you trying to infringe your belief on me?
Viata, you got the floor. You got the floor. We're going to Viata, you got the last word.
I'm going to call you whatever I want. I'm not going to call you boys. I'm not going to call you nigger. Because that's what the male energy has done over the last hundreds of years. We've gone to war because of too many male energies inflicting their beliefs on other people. We've got homeless population out of control because of the policies of men in different cities, mostly men. So as a woman with a strong female energy and a strong goddess mind, I'm going to respect every one of you, no matter what your beliefs are. And I'm not going to try and impose my beliefs on you, but I'm going to share what I've learned as the goddess that I am on this planet at this time to make changes from the patriarchal, male-dominated system that has put us in this mess that we're in now on planet Earth. I love you all. Have a wonderful day. Hope you'll join me tomorrow where I'm going to take you to a higher understanding of what love means tomorrow so we can heal our minds and our bodies. Thank you, L.A.